talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
A busy next hour for you guys here on Pinder in the Morning without Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. I'm Peter Klein. Coming up in the next hour, a little bit of Raptor talk with J.D. Bunkus. Got some Blue Jays chatter coming up at 925. But first, yesterday happened. Wasn't the busiest of trade deadlines outside of Calgary. Here in town, a couple things happening. Here to break it down for us is Darren Haynes. Darren, are you all recovered after the madness that was trade deadline day?
It was exhausting. I'm not going to lie. Still a little tired today. You know, as you said, it wasn't maybe, if for those that's looking, watching it from home, looking for 20, 30, wanted a real action-packed day, maybe they never got it. But I wasn't looking for any more work in Calgary yesterday. It was plenty busy enough.
It got off to a bit of a slow start. The most exciting part of the morning was you walking in and taking our picture at like 7 o'clock in the morning. But once things picked up, the big move, obviously, Chris Russell goes to Dallas for Yoki Paka, Pollock, and a conditional second-round pick. I guess, first of all, just your thoughts on the return for Chris Russell.
I think they did very well. Yeah, I don't think there's any should be any complaining. I mean, this is a rental of a player for 20 games. So to get the return that they got, given the situation, and given all the all NHL front offices have their analytics guys in place at this point. So knowing some of the baggage, if you will, that comes with Chris Russell, I think that's very good.
Yeah, it seems like no matter which side of the Russell debate you were on, whether you thought all the intangibles and the shot blocking was awesome or you were questioning why he had to block so many shots, it seemed like after the trade happened, everyone came together and like, yeah, that was really well done, getting a player who could play on the NHL team, a prospect, and a pick that could end up being a first-round pick. But even if it's a second, this is, I think, a fantastic return.
Yeah, the draft picks are currency. That's not my phrase. That's Brad Treliving's phrase. He uses that, and it's all about, will that be a second round pick? Whichever it is, whether it's a late first round or whether it's in the second round, whether they make that pick or whether they end up bundling that pick with maybe the pick they got in the Hudler deal. And maybe they move up to a late first round. There's all sorts of, it opens the door to all sorts of possibilities. And we saw that the way the draft played out last year. By having those extra picks, whether it was the Hamilton acquisition on the day of the draft, whether it was the ability to move up and claim or draft Oliver Shillington at number 60, they only were able to do that because they had accrued an extra third round pick, So it gives you options come the draft, and I think Brad really likes to be able to kind of see how things unfold and have some options.
So now with the players that are, I guess, the player coming back, we're probably not going to see Pollock here this year, but with Yoki Paka coming in, how do you want to see the Flames use this player for the next 20 games?
Well, let's see what he's about. I mean, I would be lying to you if I could tell you all the pros and cons of his game. I need to see this guy. So I look forward to seeing him in the lineup as a regular, and not a third pairing regular either. I mean, let's give this guy 15, 16 minutes a night and see what he's about. I think that's the key. That's what this final 20 game stretch should be all about. It should be about valuation. What do you have? What do these guys bring? Where do they slot? So you have a sense of your depth chart on the team moving into the off season, where you then start to kind of assess where you're at, where are the holes, and kind of what you need to address. So I think that's the key right now, is to bring this guy into the lineup. Now it's going to take a bit of time to adjust. I mean, my goodness, we saw what went on with Dougie Hamilton when he got here in October. Right. It's not going to be a quick adjustment, and I think people need to have maybe temper their expectations a little bit around what this guy is going to be. And really, I mean, to be fair, this guy should be evaluated starting next year. But this will be a good opportunity to at least see some of the raw skills that he has, and we'll kind of go from there.
See, and this is where I get a little bit frustrated with how things are in the NHL. I mean, part of it could be I don't know the rule well enough to figure out loopholes around this thing, but the whole getting four call-ups from the AHL, I grew up more baseball fan than hockey fan, so I'm used to, okay, trade deadline's done, bam, rosters are 40, half the minor leagues just get called up and we get to see what everyone's like. I'd kind of want that now. You know, I don't understand why they don't let teams call up a bunch of prospects just to see where everyone's at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you to a point. I think baseball goes over the top. You end up with so many relievers that they're coming in facing one batter going out because
right.
You've got 14 guys in the bullpen. So I agree. There's probably a middle ground there that would make more sense. And that would certainly be a lot more helpful to the teams that are out of it now that want to go through this evaluation process instead of kind of being tied to kind of a small number of call-ups and then just kind of bringing up guys as being by necessity as guys get dinged up and whatnot. So it's a little bit unfortunate in that regard. And so I think that's why, you know, what you want to do right now or what you're going to do is you're going to look at the guys that get recalled. And those are guys that what the math you can do in your head is, well, these are the guys they want to see more of. These are the guys they think could have something and they need to find out. And there might be some of those more experienced AHLers or guys that they just maybe don't project as being NHLers as much as they're scoring at a prolific rate in the minors, and those guys might get passed just in the interest of wanting to see what's out there. So Garnet Hathaway got the call and he joins the team and he played last night. If you were to look at the Stockton roster, that's probably not the name that would have popped out. You would have been looking at the top of the list and seeing Kenny Agostino and Freddie Hamilton. But, you know, Freddie Hamilton's been in the minors for a while. Maybe they know exactly what he is. Kenny Agostino, this is his second full season. It's a bit of an older guy. Maybe they know what he is. But maybe Garnet Hathaway has got the intrigue, and that's really one they want to evaluate and see if he could be something a little bit more.
What did you see in Garnet Hathaway in night one in the NHL?
I liked him. Yeah, I think his game is very simple, and but he's a very I really like the person, a very personal guy. I am a bit of a so I was kind of interested to see how his debut would go because an unconventional path to the NHL for Garnet Hathaway. And I thought he did what he needed to do. He made an impression. You know, you don't get a lot of ice time on the fourth line. I think, he got 12 or 13 minutes, 11, somewhere in there. And, you know, often those fourth line guys will go a week without making the kind of impression that Hathaway did in terms of getting in the middle of some scoring chances, drawing penalties. He had that breakaway where he just blew past the defender on that rush and just swooped in and missed the net though. But, you know, you saw a lot. There's a lot to like. Now, it's game one. You know, now the key for him is can he do that for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks?
And it seemed like him being out there kind of woke everyone else up a little bit. There was it had a much more chippy feel to it and a lot more physicality. And I don't know if it's totally coincidence that it was in part because there was a kid getting called up for the first time getting in the middle of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't understate that, to be honest, is the difference between this year's team and last year's team. Last year's team had rookies. They had fresh faces. They had guys motivated to make a difference. And that's something that they haven't had this year. There hasn't been a lot of rookies. Obviously, they have Sam Bennett as kind of the rookie, but Sam Bennett was always going to be here. He wasn't playing for his job. So, you know, I think that's something that freshness, that invigorating feeling that those guys bring into a dressing room when they're really there, legitimately trying to stay in the NHL. Like, I think that does a lot to kind of give the team a little kick in the backside. And we saw that last night.
Why do you think they didn't do that as much this year? Because last year wasn't all just about injuries. It seemed like there was a bit of a revolving door by design. Why do you think that went away this year?
Well, it's a roster situation, really. I mean, they had too many bodies. They got too many veteran bottom six guys. And this is a bit of a corner that, you know, through previous contracts and whatnot, they've painted themselves into that is not something that they're going to get out of, you know, easily, you know. So they finally come to the point where, okay, we got to make a decision. We made a so-called hard decision and they shuttled Mason Raymond out. And so that's where you look at the RFAs and you look at the team situation this year going into the summer, and you wonder if there won't be some maybe some prize guys that maybe don't get re-signed, just as they look to maybe turn over some of the prospects and maybe bring in some new guys and some fresh blood and see if they can't kind of just change the makeup a little bit of that, especially that bottom six.
Another guy who was kind of a new face in a new place with Josh Juris playing on the top line, what did you make of him?
Well, you know, Josh Juris, I think, is a useful player. I don't think he does not project as playing at that end of the lineup, but can he step in there and fill in and be serviceable? He's just fine there. I think Josh Juris is always going to be a guy that's going to fight and scrap for everything he gets. He's never going to be a regular, I don't think. You know, he's kind of been in and out of the lineup a little bit, and this team is one of the worst teams in the league. So, you know, as the team gets better, that's not going to be necessarily any better for Josh Juris, as he's going to get passed on the depth chart. But if he can play with, use his speed, use his side, just be, and kind of get in there fast in the forecheck and just kind of play on the edge. You know, he has ability to play on the edge. Sometimes he gets a little bit too crazy with it and it'll take some bad penalties. But he is a guy that, you know, whether you want to plug him in at right wing, plug him in at center, up and down the lineup, he's a useful guy in that regard.
Yeah, he's kind of the hockey version of a utility player, where not perfect in any one role, but fits in a number of different places.
That's right, the Jose Oquendo of the Calgary Flames.
I always kind of go Ty Wigginton, but that might be just a generational thing more than
yeah,
anything.
Yeah, probably a generational thing.
Darren Haynes from flamesfrom80feet.ca joins me now. Darren, the playoff hopes are over. The Flames, I'm going to assume, aren't going to make up 12 points on Colorado in the next 20 games. So what are you watching for the rest of the season? Is it just young guys? Where's your focus going to be for the last 20 for the Flames?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of... I don't know. It's interesting because there's going to be... As we talked about, there won't be maybe as many new guys as they probably like to send through the lineup and to bring up due to the transaction rules. But you're looking for some of the guys that are maybe been a bit more inconsistent, and maybe they can be more consistent. That right wing job on the top line is available. Josh Juris had a chance last night. Is he going to be there the rest of the year? I doubt it. Will Michael Ferland get another chance? Probably. Could Michael Ferland, again, be a fit on there, maybe for longer term? I still think that is the case, but Michael Ferland needs to be more consistent. He looks great some nights, and he's invisible on other nights. So I think you're looking at some of those guys that are still there, that have kind of an opportunity to solidify where they slot on this team going into the summer and to see those guys shine, as well as, evaluating the new guys, evaluating Garnet Hathaway. What is Yoki Opaka about? Tyler Weatherspoon, to me, has been really impressive. It looks like he's come a long way since he was first with the team. He's matured. You see him off the ice. He's losing some of the baby fat. He just feels looks more like an NHL player now. And I've been impressed with his first six games. I mean, last night he was on the ice for the first time for a goal against, and it was a power play goal. So he's been impressive. Jakub Nekladl, again, he's a UFA. He may be back. He may not be back. If he has 20 great games, I think there'd be an interest in seeing if they can bring him back for a couple of seasons. So there's lots still of guys playing for jobs. I'm just not sure how many wins will come out of it. The goaltending will probably continue to be not very good, and so you're going to see a lot of what you want to see is efforts with a lot of try. And I think even if there is a lot of try, I don't think the wins will come. And big picture thinking, if you're focused on the draft, I think most people are okay with that.
Yeah, I think a lot of people looking at what they were calling here the inverse standings, seeing Calgary bottom three, just 4 points up on the Leafs. I think there was more people a little bit more excited with that now that the trade deadline is done. Darren, over on flamesfrom80feet.ca, what can we expect this week?
That's a great question. spending a lot of time working with the Canadian press the last few days, so a lot of stuff has been going straight under the wire in my little sandbox has not had much love, but we'll get into some stuff, and I guess TBD is what I'll say, but keep your eye on it, and you never know what might pop up. Hopefully it's something interesting.
Well, here's hoping. Darren, thank you for taking some time, man. Really appreciate it.
All right, have a good one, bud.
You too. That is Darren Haynes from flamesfrom80feet.ca and some real job, too. It's going to be an interesting next few games for the Flames. 20 to go, playoffs probably not in the cards. So I want to ask you guys on the text line, what are you watching for from the Flames in the next 20 games? Is it seeing more Garnet Hathaway? Is it seeing how many faces Brandon Bolig can punch? Do you want to see Joel Colburn get a bigger... Like, what are you looking for in the next 20 games? Do you just want to see Joki Paka and Nikladl on the same line so that play-by-play guys across this great nation trip up every game? Where are you at with the Calgary Flames? Send in your thoughts at 960-960. We'll get to those texts, plus a little bit of Blue Jays talk when we come back here on Pinder in the Morning without Pinder on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You guys chiming in on the text line, what do y'all want to see from the Calgary Flames in the next 20 games? We'll get to those texts in a few minutes. Still to come in the program today here on Pinder in the Morning without Pinder, J.D. Bunkus from Sportsnet hopping on to chat a little bit about the Raptors. One of the biggest games in franchise history, I guess one of the biggest wins in the regular season in franchise history for the Raptors earlier in the week, I guess later last week now. So we'll talk about that and what's to come for the Raptors. But first, it is time for the Blue Jays Spring Training Report.
Sportsnet 960, the Blue Jays Spring Training continues. This is the latest from Florida with Peter Klein. Sportsnet 960, Calgary.
Ooh, I like that. That was good. The Blue Jays open spring training today as they get set to take on the Philadelphia Phillies. Marcus Stroman getting the start for the Blue Jays today. It's an 11 o'clock start. You can catch it on MLB.com. Mike Wilner from Sportsnet saying this may not be the last opener that Stroman starts.
Absolutely going to be the opening day starter this year, and he will become the youngest opening day starter in Blue Jays history and also the fifth different opening day starter in the last 7 years.
Now, we say that knocking on all the wood we can find, because that was supposed to be it last year. Marcus Stroman, opening day starter, no big deal. And then his knee exploded. But we're hoping this year goes a little bit differently, and he is absolutely a huge key for the Blue Jays. If he can come in and kind of take over that ace role for Toronto, I'm not going to say everyone falls into place, because that starting staff still seems a little bit sketchy to me, but at least you have at the top of that or at the top of that staff someone who you can really rely on. And he showed in the playoffs last year that he can be that guy. There's a reason that David Price was up warming up in the bullpen a lot for the Jays, because they knew they kind of wanted Stroman in that spot more than they wanted David Price. I think a lot of people forgot that during this offseason, but I really do believe that Marcus Stroman has ace-type stuff, and he can come in and really be a rock at the start of the Blue Jays rotation. The rest of the pitching staff is a little bit of a question mark, and John-Paul Morosi from Fox Sports says there's a lot of those questions on Toronto.
I certainly want to see who the fifth starter is going to be. I think that's the number one question, how that all plays out. Of course, left field, the leadoff spot, the bullpen a little bit as well, who's going to close between Storen and Osuna.
So there's a couple things to figure out. The starting staff one is, I think, the most interesting, because right now you would have, at number one, it's Stroman. I think we all agree on that. Number two would be Dickey. This is going to hurt coming out of the mouth. Number three would be Estrada. Oh, boy. And then after that, you kind of got a few guys. I mean, Happ is probably four. I don't think they brought in J-Happ to be a long relief guy. Five, to me, right now, I have Sanchez penciled in. And I have wanted Aaron Sanchez to be a starter on this freaking team for the last 3 years. Last year, it didn't really go all that well. It goes into the bullpen and then pitches fantastic. But you can really see that this year, with him adding all the muscle and real dedication to fitness and all of that stuff, not that he was Pablo Sandoval before, but it really seems like he is committed to this starting pitching thing. And if he can come in and be as effective as a starter as he was as a reliever, or even 75% of that, then that really changes the look. Because if you get Sanchez to pitch like a number two, then that bumps Dickey down to number three. You like him there. Bumps Estrada down to number four. Fine with him there. You bump Happ down to number five. Really like J-Happ as a five. So the key to me for this entire rotation is Aaron Sanchez. If he can come in and pitch like a number two, then all of a sudden this pitching staff doesn't look that bad. It is a little terrifying that the two guys who we're talking about as the keys to this rotation, Sanchez and Stroman, both younger than I am. And I'm not an old person yet. But it was the same thing last year. Oh, Stroman goes down with an injury. Well, now the season's pooched. I think we need to take a good hard look at things if the biggest thing that the season is relying on two very young arms. But that's kind of where the Blue Jays are at right now. So Marcus Stroman gets his first look at it as the Blue Jays take on the Philadelphia Phillies today. You can catch that game online. The first TV game is March 4th. That is a Friday, this Friday, when they take on the Baltimore Orioles. It's an 11 a.m. start on Sportsnet West. We'll have a lot of talk about that as we go up. As you heard, we're doing these spring training reports every day with a lot of our insiders down there. So thanks to Mike Wilner for providing a little bit of insight on Marcus Stroman today. That is your Blue Jays spring training report. Now back to the text line. What are you guys looking for from the Calgary Flames? Send in your text, 960-960. 20 games left. I think a lot of people pretty much given up on catching the Colorado Avalanche or whoever is going to be in that final wild card spot. If you're not one of them, I don't want to peer pressure anyone. If you're one of the people like, nah, 20 games left to make up 12 points, let's do this damn thing. Get on after it. Garnet Hathaway leading the charge to the promised land. If you're one of those people, send that in too. We'll probably make fun of you for it, but I don't want to pressure you into sending anything you don't want it. Okay, let's see. Oreo showing he's a keeper would be nice. Hopefully some call-ups show that as well. I think that's going to be a common theme. That's kind of where I'm at. I want to see, what is Yanni Orcio? If he's a keeper or not, just show me. Either way, don't go messing with my heart, Yanni Orcio. Just let me know what you are. I want to see a little bit more from Hathaway. I didn't mind seeing Josh Juris on the top line. I said before, he's kind of a utility guy. Someone who you can kind of just place in the... doesn't kind of... jack of all trades, master of none type of player. And you need those guys on your team. Want to see a little bit more Joe Colburn on that second line. I really liked what he's done. Sam Bennett up the middle. Give him an extended look there. Just let's see what all these guys can do in this extended look now and kind of figure out who might be sticking around next year. That's where I'm at right now. I want to see a team that's pissed off to be where they are at, be a hard team to play against, show some pride. Let's see some new faces, maybe Hunter Shinkarik and Emil Poirier. Yeah, that would be good. Like, just play with that fire. 2 years ago, this team was pretty terrible. I think we can all agree with that. They got the highest draft pick in Flames history, ended up working out the next year, but at least they were tough to play against. And we've seen that the last couple games. The New York Islanders were running around hitting everything that moved, and instead of just accepting it, the Flames go out there, punched them in the mouth a couple times. Multiple times, if you were Brandon Bolig. And then the Ottawa game happened, but it was entertaining. And then this game last night, every whistle there was a little bit of a scrum. Loved it. Just show some passion. That's what I want to see. I want to see some of the AHL players come up and see if they can contribute as a top six forward, especially on the right side of the top line. Potentially get a look at a couple more D-men. I don't want to see Schmid unless we can find someone to take him in the offseason, and we need to showcase him. I'd honestly rather see Backstrom instead of Hiller. I'd be giving Orcio at least three quarters of the start from here on in, unless he has horrible three games in a row. If that were to happen, I would bring up Poulin. I think we can all agree. No offense to the man. I'm sure he's a wonderful human being. If last night was the last time we saw Jonas Hiller in a Flames jersey, pretty okay with that. I want to see a lot of Orcio, maybe a little bit of Backstrom just to see if he's still an NHL goalie, because Minnesota sure as hell didn't think he was. All right, we'll keep this thing going. If the Flames get real high lottery odds, I won't be crying in my beer about it. Maybe it's their turn to get a jackpot. Yeah, that is absolutely another thing. It's, hey, let's... The top of this draft is pretty good this year. With Austin Matthews is obviously the prize. But then after that, you got Lane and Puljujärvi, the two Finnish kids. Even Chychrun, the defenseman, I believe with Sarnia. Kachuk. There are a few players out there who, at the top of this draft, you get them. And it's, all right, I don't hate that. Actually really don't mind that at all. So improving the draft odds, certainly something that you'd want to be doing if you were the Calgary Flames. And if you're a fan, I mean, listen, you never want the actual Flames to be thinking like we are, right? Like, you want the actual Flames to be going out there and giving it a 110% all of the time and all of those things. But from a fan perspective, nights like last night, not bad. They went out there, played with a little bit of heart, really battled, grinded out, saw some promise, and lost in regulation. That's kind of where we're at right now, isn't it? Just, all right, go out there, give it the old college try, but for the love of God, don't let games go to overtime if you're going to lose. If you're going to lose, lose in a regulation. The odd win sprinkled in, fine, whatever. But none of this, let's just get a point and inch a little bit further. No, don't be doing that. More texts coming in. What are you guys looking for from the Flames this season in the next 20 games? I would like to see Hiller not play. I'm tired of him losing things for us. Maybe that's the strategy. Hiller comes in and just blows everything up for the Flames. First overall, let's do this. I think we should be like the Avalanche last year, not worried about getting a worse pick, but win as much as you can, gain momentum and confidence for the next year. Is there a big difference between a 5-10 pick? I think there is a bit of a difference, but again, I don't think the players need to be focusing on that. That is one caveat I'll put on all of this. I think that as fans, we all want to see the Flames lose as much as possible, get that high draft pick, and get a pretty good player in this. The players can't be thinking like that. The coaches can't be thinking like that, because when that happens, and we've mentioned this a lot in the last little bit, that's when Edmonton happens. Don't let Edmonton happen to you, Calgary Flames. Go out there, compete, do all those things that we hear all those cliches about all of the time. Do that. Be a cliche team. Go hit people, punch people, score some goals, be exciting, and just see where the ball lands. Even if Backstrom is still an NHL goalie, he won't be next year, so what's the point? Play Ortio nearly every game. Let Hiller play the rest. Maybe it'll get him a spot on another team. I agree with part of that. Ortio most of the way, but I want to see what Backstrom can do, even a little bit. We know what Hiller is at this point. And that last part, maybe he'll get a spot on another team. Sure, fine, good for him if he does, but that's not my chief concern right now. I would like to see Klein take a leave of absence for the rest of the season. I don't think that's going to happen. I just don't want to be the best team for the last 2 weeks and move down 4 to 5 spots in the draft. I said it yesterday. That happened here a lot in that stretch where, we made a run late, and if we just had a couple other pieces, we'd have been right there. We were a Tony Amonte away. Let's go get Tony Amonte this offseason. We just needed, if we would have had Ole Jokinen all season long, this team would have been a playoff team. That's another thing. You don't want to see these guys rattle off 8 of their next 10. Don't get into the playoffs, but you've just cost yourself a top 5 pick. Cohesion. When the Flames had their 7-game streak, they played as a team, not just a 5-man unit, as a 20-man unit. Haven't seen that in a long time. Too many players playing for themselves. I want to see them go back to team play. That is one thing. I've noticed a lot this season. There's a crispness that isn't there. I think I've said this before. There's a little bit of just passes being a little bit off, and the first line hasn't had that. The first line, that power play, has started to look not bad. That goal from Monahan, where it's just Giordano, Brody, Gaudreau, Monahan in the slot scores. Like, just quick goal. That was beautiful. But we haven't seen that a lot this year, have we? It's been a lot of... Now, part of that is the stretch pass, and that's not a high percentage play, but a lot of, like, just pass in the neutral zone. Just went through his skates. Just a little bit off the tape. There hasn't been tape to into the offensive zone, and here we go. So yeah, I'll agree with that. A little bit of cohesion, a little bit of crispness. Someone texting in, ELPH, exciting last place hockey. There it is. Yep. Want this team to be fun to watch. Yeah. It does have a ring to it, doesn't it, Jay? I think we can get behind that.
ELPH, all the way.
ELPH, all the way. Get that. I'll get that tattooed. I'm not going
to
do that.
By the way, I like to don't let Edmonton happen to you.
Friends don't let friends let Edmonton happen to them. Two things, Gaudreau continuing to be a point-per-game player and beat Vancouver and Edmonton at all costs. I do kind of want to go and look at that. Maybe that'll be a thing for tomorrow. Because that's really the thing. Even one of the guys who I follow on Twitter and watches YouTube videos is Steve Dangle. He's a guy who covers the Leafs quite a bit. He works for Sportsnet now. But He is full Tank Nation and all this for the Leafs, but when they lose to the Habs and the Sens and the Bruins, it's just a little bit of a little knife in there more. If the Flames lost every game this year but the ones they played against Vancouver and Edmonton, I think we'd all be okay with that. You know, just go out there, have some fun, play some exciting hockey, but if you could stick it to the Canucks and Oilers a couple times, let Edmonton win their other games so they can pass the Flames, but let the Flames beat Edmonton a few times so we can all feel better about ourselves. That seems like a good compromise, I think. And that's where we will go to break. Coming up next, the Toronto Raptors had a very exciting week last week. J.D. Bunk is here to break it all down when we come back here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Talking sports in the morning. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Fourteen minutes away from 10 o'clock. Jim Rome will take over then. after that. Then an abbreviated version of the Big Show and Hockey Central at noon, because 4 o'clock tonight, it is Rogers, Calgary Flames hockey warm-up for the Flames and the Bruins. Then puck drop is at 5. With all of this talk about tanking and all of these things, well, we never said the word tank, but we all know we're thinking it. I might start doing this every day, going over to the draft lottery simulator at Future Considerations. Just doing it once, because I've been there before. Your team's in the draft lottery. You hit that thing like 1,000 times, and finally it comes up your way. Yeah! Getting Austin Matthews. We'll just do it once a day, see where the Flames come out, get familiar with some of the names we might be looking at. So ran the simulator. The first overall pick goes to Toronto. That was disappointing to see. You're not going to like this one after that. Number two is Vancouver. So it goes Toronto, Vancouver, but then number three, the fine folks, the Future Considerations in this one draft lottery simulator had Calgary getting the third overall pick. I think we would take that. So with that, it was Austin Matthews to Toronto, Patrick Laine to Vancouver, Jesse Puljujarvi going to Calgary after that. Number four was Edmonton, Jacob Chychrun. Number five, Matthew Tkachuk to Winnipeg. Number six was Alex Nylander to Buffalo. And just in the stuff that I've seen so far, that is kind of the cutoff to me. Like Matthews is kind of in his own tier. I think Laine and Puljujarvi are in their own tier as well. And then Chychrun, Tkachuk, and Nylander. Then after that, I think there is a bit of a fall off. Even though Pierre-Luc Dubois looked very good in the top prospect game, and Julien Gauthier has turned some eyes, as anyone who's 6'4", 225 pounds would do. But now it is time. Enough about our depressing draft talk. It's time to talk about a team that did some winning this weekend. A little bit of losing, we're not going to talk about that. It is time for some Toronto Raptor talk with J.D. Bunkus. J.D., how are you today?
I'm great, and I like that you're doing the simulator thing, because we actually do that on the Andrew Walker Show as well, except for we do it with the NBA, because as you may know, and maybe your listeners don't, the Raptors will have the lesser of the Nuggets-Knicks pick this year. So we like to check in on that from time to time. And, I mean, you never wish for an injury, but the news that Danilo Gallinari is going to be out a month, the Nuggets forward with some torn ligaments in his ankle, bodes well for the Raptors, who are trying to sneak into, I would guess that the goal would be a top eight pick, I guess, would be kind of a triumph for them.
See, that's the best of both worlds. You got a team battling for a playoff spot that also, because weird trades happen, might be getting into the draft lottery. It's the best of both worlds, isn't it?
No, it's awesome, actually. You get to cheer for a tank on one hand, and then you get to cheer for a team trying to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's awesome. I mean, it's a very, very unique situation. I think they have the Bucks pick next year, and the Bucks haven't been, you know, very good. So, I mean, if they continue to trend that way, I mean, could have 2 years like this. It'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, that's some easy living if you're doing it that way. And I said I only want to do this once a day because I've done the ESPN mock draft simulator with basketball, especially like the Raptors projected to pick 12th or something like that. And you hit the thing 45 times, and then that 1% chance of them getting the first overall pick happens, and you just lose it. Yeah, getting Andrew Bogut, baby. Woo!
Yeah. Yeah, you love it. I love the simulator. I can play it all along. That and the trade machine, those are like two of my favorite things to hang around on.
Yeah, that you can kill an afternoon pretty easily doing that. The Raptors
really
killed
can.
An evening against the Cleveland Cavaliers by beating them over the weekend. I said before, that was probably one of the bigger wins in franchise history in the regular season. Am I overstating that at all? Because I really loved watching that game.
You're not, and I would even look at the Bulls victory back in 96 when the Raptors were one of the only teams to knock them off. But it's like, that was a trap game. And while the Raptors ended up getting a nice win, and it's a nice moment for the franchise, they weren't like a contending team trying to take the next step. This was a real one. This was a statement game. And you had your best player on the team, Kyle Lowry, go toe-to-toe with the best player in the Eastern Conference in LeBron James. It was an awesome game. And I was actually curious to kind of hear your end of things because, I mean, here people have been tracking the Raptors for quite some time. Obviously, there is a little bit of a call me when the playoffs start buzz. But I'm kind of wondering how it is out there in terms of, hey, was that a game where you felt like there was some reaction? Like you felt like some people were taking notice of the Raptors? Like, I mean, I think even if you don't like basketball, if you tuned into some of that game and caught even a few minutes of Kyle Lowry, there's no way you could come away with that not liking him and not respecting his gamesmanship, no?
No, absolutely. The problem with my perspective is that I hang out with a lot of basketball people as well, so my point of view is a little bit skewed, and I think one of the things that hurt was that that game happens on Friday night, and then Saturday, half the NHL got traded. And so that kind of...
Right, and then Monday you have trade deadline.
Yeah, exactly. So the timing of it was a little bit off.
We didn't even talk about it yesterday, so... Yeah, it was tough timing.
The timing kind of sucked for it a little bit, but it was. Like, when I watched the game and then went out with a few people after, and even a couple non-basketball guys were like, yeah, I saw some people on Twitter. That looked really awesome. So it's starting to catch some people's attention, but I think there is a lot of wake me up in the playoffs out here. Honestly, I think there's a lot of, let's see what this team does in the playoffs, and then we'll get a little bit excited about it.
Yeah, once they're a round in. Sort of.
Yeah.
But, I think that it was a really, really good win, especially for grabbing the casual fan base. I think that, like I said, I think that there are a lot of people that still look at the record mostly and not the team and think to themselves, well, I remember them being around this place last year, and what's the real differences? And they still have, you know, the same cornerstones that ended up losing last season. So you're just like, I get the hesitance. I get the being a little resilient to thinking that this is a contender team or a team that should be tops in the East. But, I mean, they are different this year, and I thought that that last win was a real, real gauge of how things are going.
How important was that for Kyle Lowry, the basketball player? Because it was DeMar DeRozan was sick with the flu. It was hop on these shoulders, boys. We're riding this thing out. And, like, the confidence on that step back at the end of the game, how big was that for Kyle Lowry going forward?
I mean, like I said, Lowry's a gamer, right? He's the type of guy that lives for those type of moments. So I don't know if anything was too big for him personally. What I will say, though, is, again, when we're talking about the differences of this year versus last year, remember post All-Star break last year when the Raps started kind of breaking down, they started having all those defensive holes. And then one of the biggest issues for them was Kyle Lowry's health. And basically the way that he started looking, he broke down in that Wizards series. He wasn't the same guy, and he wasn't as effective, and basically everything reflected that. You look at this season, and he's playing the Cavs late in the year, and he's banging out shots like that and putting his team on his back and showing that him getting in shape in the offseason, and I know a professional athlete who makes millions of dollars getting in shape, we've like lauded him as a hero, like way to go, like you're one job, you did it. But it's paying off, like he looks better, and I mean, I think in terms of, again, the confidence of the team going forward, knowing that their star player, their best player, as good as DeMar DeRozan is, Kyle Lowry, this team's going where Kyle Lowry takes them. And to see him play healthy and with confidence is massive right now. And I think that that's one of the biggest things that you can kind of hang on to as a fan, that this year is going to be different.
And I think the Detroit game kind of showed how important it is to give this guy some rest, because if you are without him for any stretch of time in the playoffs, it can get ugly quick.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no question. If they don't have Kyle Lowry, they're finished. That's not up for debate.
was the Detroit game a little bit concerning to you? Because that was...
No.
Even with Kyle Lowry out, that was a game I thought they should have at least looked better than that in.
Sure, but they I don't think that the coaching staff was too concerned about them winning that game, just because, I mean, I know Corey Joseph got into foul trouble, but there's no reason that DeLon Wright should have played that many minutes in that game if they're trying to go all out and win. You probably roll the dice with Kojo a little bit more. I think that it was a little bit of a letdown game. It was too bad that, you know, they performed that way in the second half. But again, you got a really good look at your rookie point guard, got to see what he can do a little bit. He's a little bit of a gamer, that DeLon Wright. He's the first round pick this year. They've taken some flack because they passed on Bobby Portis, the Bulls first round pick, who's looked pretty good and is at a position of need for the Raptors. But I liked a lot of what I saw from DeLon Wright. He's a tall point guard. He can see over the defense. He's got really nice handle, and he doesn't pick up his dribble too early. The jump shot is obviously a work in progress, but there really aren't a ton of guys that come into the NBA and already have that ready-made jump shot. I mean, you even look at this year's draft class as an example. I mean, you got Devin Booker out in Phoenix, and then that's pretty much the end of the list in terms of – and Kristaps Porzingis, and then that's pretty much the end of the list in terms of guys that have reliable three-point shots at this point in their career. So – I mean, I'm not really concerned about it. You didn't have Kyle Lowry, and I thought that they did kind of let up a little bit later in the second half. And on the bright side of things, losing that game, was that Detroit ended up winning, and it bumped the Bulls out, right? The Bulls have won, I think, only three of their last 10 games, and I think now they're on the outside looking in the NBA playoff picture, if I have that right. And I was saying this to somebody else the other day. Wouldn't you take the Raptors finishing second behind Cleveland and knowing the Bulls were out of the playoffs rather than finish first and potentially play the Bulls in the first round. Like, I know what I would take. And that's just get the Bulls the hell out of there. I know they've been struggling, but if Detroit can get into that eighth spot or even seventh spot and play the Raptors in the first round, I think that's actually like a really good matchup for them. So I wasn't too disappointed with the Raptors losing that game, nor was I concerned.
So to recap, we are not only maybe thinking about the Raptors either trying to get into first place in the Eastern Conference or picking their shot for who they play second and still getting to look at mock draft simulators. It is a wonderful time to be a Raptor fan. JD, thanks for taking some time today. Really appreciate it.
No sweat, buddy. Always enjoy chatting with you.
It's my pleasure, sir. Thank you. That is JD Bunkus with a little bit of Raptor talk as they come off a pretty good victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers and then fall to the Detroit Pistons. Time for us to get out of here. Again, Jim Rome coming up at 10 o'clock. All of it leading up to the Flames taking on the Bruins. 4 o'clock warm-up, 5 o'clock puck drop here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Get the fuck out of here.